In February, three women, all in their 20s, were arrested in Moscow for saying a prayer, and on Friday were sentenced to 2 years in prison. They are members of a punk rock group called Pussy Riot. They are alleged to have said a blasphemous prayer at the altar of the cathedral. The prayer essentially said, "Virgin Mother, redeem us of Putin." Vladimir Putin being the president, the Virgin Mother being that young Palestinian who once prayed that the mighty be brought down from their thrones. The Pussy Rioters were dressed in bright colored garments with balaclavas over their faces. The clothing was not sexually provocative. The women looked somewhat like clowns. Note the YouTube clip the rioters produced has been supplemented with music and guitars. They simply prayed and were quickly led away by security. Note too, there was no church service in progress. The nine so-called victims, those who heard their prayer, were predominantly security and visitors. Note too that the three women, as well as being feminists, are active Christians. They prayed accompanied by kneeling and crossing themselves. The so-called disrespect shown to the Virgin Mother, the protectress of Russia, seems to be that their request was of a political nature. It was lay women making the request. Their dress was not of the usual clerical garments, and they were facing the wrong way. Their backs and thus their bottoms face the holy altar. The women have said they meant no disrespect to the church. However, they did mean to disrespect the close relationship between the patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church and the Putin regime. Putin's re-election and its alleged irregularities has signaled a retrogression towards the authoritarianism of the past. Patriarch Kirill has been openly supportive of Putin before and after the election this year. And they did mean to create a scandal. The cathedral is a stone's throw from the Kremlin and is deeply symbolic of the current church-state cooperation, having been built in the 1990s to replace its predecessor, which was destroyed by Stalin. The site, like the Pussy Prayer, asks the fundamental, scandalous question of who owns God. Is God just a puppet toy belonging to the church, a toy for the state to manipulate the strings and enhance its power? Or is God a subversive power out among the people, working fearlessly to promote justice, equality, and mutuality? Patriarch Kirill and his cronies responded with ferocity. Kirill circulated a letter to be read out in all Moscow churches, encouraging the faithful to write to the Procurator General, requesting the maximum sentence for the woman, 5 years, for blasphemy and aggravated hooliganism. Then he conducted a service in which some 20 bishops in full regalia lined up to purge the sanctuary. Later they called a public rally. Father Chaplin, who often acts as the church's spokesman, has made some revealing comments. "It was a sin against God," he said, "but they also insulted the patriarch, who is a symbol of the church." All these acts around symbols are attempts to redistribute power. Well, he's right about that. This trial has been willed by God, and he called on Russia to do away with the secular state. When Christian leaders start to equate what they find offensive with what God finds offensive, when Christian leaders start to believe criticism of them is criticism of the church, and when Christian leaders openly seek more power in the running of the state, we are far removed from the humble carpenter's son who sought to be true to an egalitarian vision of justice. The egotism and blatant aggrandizement of power revealed by these statements from the hierarchy of the Russian church is unfortunately typical of unaccountable power and is rife across the Christian world and in Christian history. Yet the patriarch is not the only voice of Russian orthodoxy. There are traitors in cassocks, as Kirill calls them. A retired priest, Father Vinnikov, likens the baying of the mob led by the patriarch for the blood of the three to those who called, "Crucify him." Vinnikov goes on to recall that during the communist times when the church was persecuted by the state, the patriarch and bishops did not raise their voices in protest. No, they only raised their voices to condemn those who did protest. Father Vinnikov and other priests and academics of the Moscow-Helsinki group have written invoking the ancient Russian tradition of the holy fool, who was able with impunity to criticize the Tsar. St. Basil was a holy fool. And the group writes, "Today his well-educated and courageous followers are kept behind bars." The tradition of being a fool for Christ has a long history, not exclusive to Russia. It goes right back into the biblical prophetic tradition, where courageous individuals tried to call the powerful to account. These individuals often made dramatic actions and or lived in a manner that set them apart. Many would say this is the tradition that shaped Jesus and in which he walked. Many of the saints of the church have followed this prophetic foolish path since, dressing differently, rejecting the trappings of power, criticizing church and state, and calling us all to a vision of equality and mutuality. They are the clowns of God. As soon as I saw the YouTube clip of those women in front of the cathedral, I knew the tradition they were walking in. I know the tradition because I too have walked it. I was arrested some 30 years ago for wearing sackcloth and putting ash on my head. In the midst of a service where the church had prostituted itself by getting in bed with the state, I and those arrested with me were calling the church to return to its origins as known in the justice of Jesus. Yet our arrest and punishment is nothing compared to what these women have already endured. There is a cost to being a faithful fool for God. Indeed, it is that cost that has swung public opinion. Although the prosecution was seeking a reduced sentence of 3 years of corrective labor out of the 7 possible, that only happened once the polls showed opinion shifting and church supporters being outnumbered by those who viewed Pussy Riot's treatment as too vindictive. This may be a worrying sign for the Orthodox Church, which has grown in both power and property ownership under Putin, and now views itself as Russia's moral voice. Ogla Sibiokva of the Sova Human Rights Center said many were fearing that cases like Pussy Riot show that Russia is no longer a secular state. The liberal Viramaste Business Daily concluded that the church has just committed its biggest error since 1901. That was the year it excommunicated the beloved writer Leo Tolstoy. This morning we heard read King Solomon asking for the gift of wisdom and receiving it along with riches and glory. Stephen Heim's novel, The King David Report, accurately alerts us to the political spin doctrine written into the scriptures by the ecclesial elite that is going on as David and Solomon are praised and adored. What we, as readers and hearers today, need to be aware of with Solomon is a story of a king excessively taxing his people to build great edifices, allegedly to God's glory, but also, of course, to Solomon's glory, and even using his own people as slave laborers to this end. It is no surprise that upon Solomon's death, the kingdom fractures and falls apart. I mention Heim's novel because the book is a clever critique of the East German power structure in the 1970s and the sort of authoritarianism that is re-emerging under Putin. The equation of religious leaders receiving earthly riches to create glorious buildings in return for political sycophantism is a very old scenario. Pussy Riot is symbolically the head of a protest movement that is being shut down. Bloggers have been arrested. People are scared to express anti-Putin sentiment. Only state-sanctioned demonstrations are allowed. Pussy Riot draw attention to precisely what is so disturbing, a totalitarian nation where the church and state are becoming one. The Bible and our church tradition are familiar with these interwoven themes of prayer, prophets, and power. Who, how, and where one prays to God, and who decides who, how, and where, are issues that occur repeatedly throughout history. Religion again and again slides into the mire of elitism, where only authorized clergy can pray, and authorized liturgies can be prayed in public. And again, brave prophets have to remind us that God is not in the pocket or pay of the elites. Some religious people who spend significant amount of time praying develop as a result certitude about life, about their sense of belonging, and their sense that some others don't belong. They develop, as it was, a moral, ideological perimeter that excludes the unfit. They believe justice is about the less powerful agreeing to the requirements of the more powerful, and their God will offer grace and forgiveness upon compliance. Yet other religious people who may pray less, who may even attend church less, or even believe less, become, through their prayer, less certain about right and wrong and more tolerant towards those who don't fit. The discipline of prayer connects them with all people crossing moral and ideological perimeters. They believe that justice is about empowering the less powerful and disturbing the imbalance of power that elites like to maintain. Their God is that subversive energy, permeating the halls of privilege, causing discomfort, confusion, and chaos. The former, I suggest, is the God of Putin and Kirill. The latter is the God of Pussy Riot and a number of us here. Christian clowns, girls with guitars and foolish knitted hats, not men with guns. Head a revolution against authoritarianism and the betrayal of the church by its leaders. It was not just three women on trial. It was also Putin. It was also the church. It was a way of exercising power that was and still is on trial. It is the people's right to pray that is at stake. It's a clash of gods. And it isn't over yet.